Baseball has been known as America's pastime since its creation, bringing together people across the nation to root for their favorite teams in tournaments such as the World Series and World Baseball Classic. However, the game's international popularity has been increasing dramatically, prompting discussions regarding how sports and international politics intersect. We may be seeing a shift in America's pastime becoming a global one, which brings us to the questions of how did we get here and where we may be heading next. From Seton Hall University, this is The Global Current. I'm your host, Trisha Ballion. With me today are two fellow Seton Hall students. Covering the domestic situation today is our analyst, Bobby Kyle. Hi, Bobby.
Hello.
And focusing on the international aspect today is Kat Anderson. Hey, Kat.
Hello.
So before we dive too deep into this topic, I want to turn to you, Bobby, and just ask if you can give us some background on the MLB itself and how baseball has been spreading, kind of set us up with some context here.
Yeah, so Major League Baseball, obviously known as America's game and America's pastime, has always been an extremely large sport in the United States. There are 30 teams across the entire nation split in two leagues and is considered one of the big four in terms of baseball, hockey, football, and basketball. However, we've seen a decline recently in American popularity of baseball. Largely, the youth demographic has been falling and has largely become mockingly called an old man's sport. But with that decline, it's interesting because we see a simultaneous increase in viewership and an interest across the world. So while America's game continues to fall, we see places like Japan and Korea and East Asia and Latin America in North and South America increasing. So it's just really interesting how America's game has really sort of flipped domestically, but managed to increase internationally and get a bigger audience.
Mm-hmm. And so now I want to ask you, Kat, could you just explain why does this international growth in baseball matter? Like, why is it something we're focusing on?
Yeah, absolutely. So a big component to this is soft power. And so some of that is spreading American influence to countries that may not have been as receptive to American influence. So a really good example of that is President Obama saw an exhibition game in Cuba with the president of Cuba at the time. And that is a huge deal because historically, the United States and Cuba obviously have some pretty tense relationships. And so then, and the other aspect of it is that when players from these other countries come over and play in the United States, that can really affect those countries' perceptions of baseball in America. So a really good example of that is Shohei Ohtani. He's one of the biggest stars in baseball right now. He is the face of Major League Baseball. He's one of the best players to ever play the game, and he's Japanese. And so he's become a really big player in America, so it's actually beneficial for both Japan and the United States. So in Japan, Ohtani's considered, he's not just an athlete, he's a genuine celebrity, and it changes the way that we interact with the Japanese culture, and it brings those two things closer together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you want to add anything, Bobby, regarding American influence in these areas and kind of how that's impacting the spread?
You know, kind of what Kat was saying, soft power has always been a good way to, you know, and it's called soft power, obviously, because it's a non-military way to spread influence and culture into different countries, as she was talking about with Shohei Ohtani. And no other country has really done that better than America. Obviously, it's its own game. And we've seen, you know, areas such as Latin America, East Asia, that have previously been under control or a lot of influence has been exerted over them by the U.S. We've seen it in South America with the Roosevelt Corollary and the Monroe Doctrine, and with the American occupation in Japan and Korea post-World War II. It's not really a coincidence that those two places that have not only picked up American culture have also picked up American baseball and why it's so popular there. It's an ambassador for the nation, spreading its culture, making it think that, you know, the American ethos and all that is, you know, so superior or so entertaining and something they really want to pick up on. It's really helps America get a more favorable rating from places that, especially when you're being occupied, you might not otherwise have.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely kind of almost not remedying per se, but kind of softening some of those like post-colonial blows and, you know, tensions that we've been seeing as obviously that progresses and these relationships progress as well. And I want to stick with you, Bobby, and ask just regarding previous baseball seasons, how can we see the importance of this spread throughout these previous seasons?
So, without a doubt, the biggest spread and the biggest way that we see that spread is through the World Baseball Classic. It was established a long time ago, a couple decades ago, by Major League Baseball in response to the World Cup, basically. They saw how popular that was, and they wanted a version of that for their game, smartly enough, because that increases international awareness of baseball. So there's 24 nations that play in the World Baseball Classic. It's been expanding. It plays all over the world. There were games this year in Japan, Taiwan, the U.S. There's games in Canada in the past. And it's the biggest baseball tournament in the world on an international stage. Each team's best players compete and try and win the title. Interestingly enough, America has only won one international baseball title. But that's largely because a lot of previous tournaments have not seen interest from American players. I know in 2017, for example, Mike Trout did not play. And I remember reading an article of him talking about how he really felt that he missed out on that he missed a sense of national pride. So 2023's World Baseball Classic was really adopted by the American players. We saw people like Bryce Harper, even though he was injured, sign up for the Classic. We saw Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, Mookie Betts. And America really became a strong team, and it kind of mirrored what a lot of the world has been seeing, too. There's a lot of buy-in. MLB is not the biggest fan in the world, not MLB itself, but the teams of letting their players go because there's an injury risk. But we've seen a lot more adoption recently, especially in 2023, with players like Juan Soto lighting up the international stage for Puerto Rico. And it's really just grown the game and been a platform to grow the game on an international level that obviously the league itself can expand into other countries outside the U.S. and Canada. So it's really been good to grow the game there and see that teams and nations really pick up the sport and root for their own teams that they're really invested in.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And that kind of bridges over to what I wanted to ask Kat about regarding how this has been the greatest growth seen internationally. Could you just shed some more light on that whole process regarding the international spread?
Yeah, absolutely. So prior to the WBC, like Bobby was kind of saying, the most international aspect to baseball was the fact that we have Canadian teams, and those Canadian teams are not historically very successful. There's only one right now because they've all had to leave. It's a very big deal that the MLB has been able to expand to an international audience and have success there. So we saw that in Japan. We see it in a lot of Latin American countries. We even see it in other countries. So one of the big stories of the WBC from last year was the growth of England's team. In prior WBCs, they hadn't really been competitive. They didn't really have a lot of funding because nobody in England really cares about baseball. And that's been a huge shift. They were able to finance themselves a lot better. And so that's a really big deal, is that baseball has finally started to be successful at marketing itself to international audience. And that's been part of the reason for the success of their international games and other methods of expansion like that.
And so sticking with you, Kat, how is this continual growth impacting the countries that it's spreading to, like within their domestic systems, within their domestic teams that they're creating?
Yeah. In England, like I said, the transition from the previous WBC to the one in 2023 saw a huge growth of funding. It saw a growth of buy-in. According to the MLB, over $100 million were spent in funding youth baseball programs in different markets because of the WBC. One of the biggest things that stops people a lot of times in poorer countries from playing baseball is that it can be a really expensive sport to get into. So the thing people always say that's really good about soccer, for example, is all you need is a ball and somewhere to kick it. In baseball, you can need a lot more equipment. It can be a lot more technical. So it's really significant that the MLB has been able to spread to the point that people are interested in putting those finances into it and that people are willing to dedicate those types of resources.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so this can, either of y'all can pick up this question, but do you think this is indicative of a further spread in future seasons? Do you think maybe we're like hitting a peak and it might decrease? Like, what do you think the future outlook of this will be?
Yeah, I think absolutely. We've seen more countries adopt an MLB international game this year. And I know it's something we'll talk about later, but MLB does these games internationally across the globe, different countries. And this season, they're going and they're playing four games in four different countries. It's completely massive for the game because in the past, they'd be lucky if there was one London game. Now they're all over the place and they continue to spread. And the growth of baseball and the popularity of baseball continues to grow to places where before, if you asked someone on the street what baseball was, they couldn't answer you. Places that have really seen a lot of growth are Czech Republic, Pakistan, China, and they've really been increasing too, not only in awareness of baseball, but in their skill. And that's why we've seen them do better on the international stage, especially with the WBC. So I'd say the game is absolutely growing internationally, definitely more than domestically. And that's really impressive for a game that has really dominated the U.S. and been so unheard of outside of it for so long.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioning countries like the Czech Republic, Pakistan, shows that it's also expanding beyond the realm of American influence. You're seeing it places where, you know, we're traditionally not seeing much American influence previously. And I want to stick with you, Bobby, if you can just expand on what you were saying earlier regarding the MLSB's conscious efforts to expand internationally.
Yeah, so with the success of the WBC, the MLB has focused not only on national teams and that international tournament, but actually playing their league's games in other countries. Last year, there was the London series, Mexico City series, where two teams would play, you know, a baseball series, two, three games abroad, which is previously unheard of. I mean, before that, you got the U.S. and Canada, and that's where the MLB has played. It's their league, but now it's played all over the place. And not only is it great for those places and the fans there to go check out a game and watch it and see if they like the MLB, but a lot of U.S. fans also flock there. And in some way, that's spreading their culture to us as well. I know I'm very excited to be going to one this summer, as are a lot of fans. When your team really gets in one, it's really exciting because you know that your team is becoming an international brand. It's a lot more than just, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies represent the Delaware Valley and that's it. Now it's being represented to the citizens of London, and the Padres are being represented to Mexico City. It's really showcases their teams and their players on an international stage. So yeah, absolutely. Soft power continues to grow. These international games and baseball continues to grow as well, especially with a lot of the benefits of that and a lot of the outreach of that, as seen with the WBC.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about some of the games coming up that, you know, we can be looking forward to, people should be looking out for?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Phillies and the Mets will be playing in London, regular season series. The Astros and the Rockies will be playing in Mexico City this year. And interestingly enough, the season itself is opening up with the Dodgers and the Padres playing in South Korea. I know they've opened up seasons previously, but it's always interesting to think the first baseball game that matters in the year will not be played on U.S. soil. And besides that, they're also doing an exhibition spring training game this year in the Dominican Republic with the Red Sox and the Rays. So for those international markets and for fans like myself, it's really interesting. It's really cool to see teams go international in not just, you know, a physical sense, but in a cultural sense, in a branding sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, with fans flocking to go see it in other countries, it increases like tourism and things like that, and just whole loads of cultural exchange. And then now turning to you, Kat, I wanted to ask that aside from the increased relations internationally, the attitudes there, what are some other reasons that countries are adopting baseball?
Yeah, so one of the major aspects to it is health benefits. So in Saudi Arabia, for example, they're using soccer, I think, more so, but countries can use baseball as a way to face an obesity epidemic and just keep their citizens active and fit and healthy. And then it also just means a new stream of revenue for countries that wouldn't have that otherwise. So obviously London's not typically considered impoverished, but just think about the additional tourist revenue from people coming in from Philadelphia and from New York, and then all of the money that they're going to be spending while they're there. So they're going to be buying food and drinks at the stadiums. They've bought tickets to the games. It's similar to think of it as the revenue that a concert generates when an artist is touring in maybe a smaller city. It's not just the people who live there. It's everyone coming in and traveling to get there, which can really boost a smaller city's economy. And then one of the other things that it does is that it just provides a greater stage for international competition. And it goes back to what we were saying before, that can be a huge asset when you're trying to think of ways to increase your soft power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, definitely. Just recapping on a lot of the stuff we've been talking about regarding international relations and its intersection with sports in this really interesting way. And so either of y'all can take this, just regarding the most notorious international players for the MLB, just shed some light on who they are and kind of the influences that they've brought.
Yeah, so obviously the face of the MLB right now, he was on the cover of the video game The Show for baseball. Shohei Ohtani is 3-time MVP. I believe it's back-to-back-to-back. He is dominating the game right now, and he is like a superstar not only in America, but especially in Japan. He is the biggest face of the MLB, and he's an international player. He barely speaks English, if he can at all. There's not only that, but there's also Juan Soto. He's a massive player. He just signed with the biggest team, the Yankees. He's from Puerto Rico. And there's also David Ortiz, which is a legendary Red Sox player known as Big Poppy. He is beloved. He's on all MLB coverage. And that sort of thing is really impressive because it shows that those players who are not just your people sitting on the bench, but the best players in baseball that have developed the systems outside the U.S. And it's really interesting because that shows the growth not only of baseball itself, but of the leagues that they came up in. Every MLB team at this point has a minor league team playing in the Dominican Republic. And going back to David Ortiz, he came up in the Dominican League, and the Dominican League has seen a lot of growth since then. It keeps the island incredibly interested and sort of implants a piece of American culture onto an island that historically the U.S. has had a lot of authority over. But it's really interesting to see how they've adopted that specific piece of culture so well and really taken it in as their own and now contributed back to the system. You know, it's no longer just the MLB. It's all these smaller leagues in all these different places growing and bringing in revenue for going to games and bringing in more interest for baseball as well.
It's definitely something that's very uniquely American in terms of international relations and how we're conducting ourselves abroad. It's definitely something that I don't think any other countries could really be doing the same level of. And so what it's made, I know you touched on it earlier, being, you know, one of the most famous player of the MLB right now. So what else has made Ohtani so significant?
Yeah, so I'm going to hand this one over to Kat, proud owner of that video game with Shohei Ohtani on it.
Yeah, so what sets Ohtani apart from any other player that baseball has really ever seen is that he is both a pitcher and a hitter. Nobody has done that since Babe Ruth, and that's been over 100 years. And the thing that makes Ohtani unique even in that aspect is that he is an exceptionally good hitter and an exceptionally good pitcher. So it's not just, oh, he's kind of good at doing both. It's he's really good and he's elite at doing both of those things, which nobody has ever done before. So like Bobby mentioned, he's a three-time MVP, and at least two of those times he has been voted in unanimously, which I don't think has ever happened before. So that's huge. He's one of the highest paid players in the MLB. He just signed a contract in the offseason with the Dodgers that basically has the highest payout of any contract ever. And so I think those are some of the things that really set him apart, just aside from all that. And then that makes him not just a celebrity here, but also in Japan. So a really good way to demonstrate that is that he recently announced that he was married. He posted on his Instagram a couple weeks ago, and people in Japan are calling it the Ohtani loss because he's just that big. He's not just an athlete. He's a genuine like pop star in a sense.
I absolutely see how huge of a cultural impact he has on that. And so what has been the significance of this contract that we're seeing?
Yeah, so it's uniquely structured in that he is making a pretty low amount annually for the next 10 or 11 years, and then he's going to be making millions and millions of dollars right towards the end. And so he was signed by the Los Angeles Dodgers, and then they also signed one of the biggest free agents out of Japan this offseason, Yamamoto. He's a pitcher. He has never thrown a pitch in the major leagues, and they signed him also to one of the most massive contracts in baseball. And so the fact that they were willing to take that risk on a player that has never pitched in the major leagues. So for reference, Yamamoto was signed 12 years for $325 million. And Ohtani's contract was 10 years, $700 million. So Yamamoto has never thrown a major league pitch, but he garnered such reputation in part from his success for Team Japan in the World Baseball Classic that the Dodgers were willing to sign him not just to a really expensive deal, but to a really long-term deal, which is a huge risk for any athlete, but especially a pitcher, and especially one who's never thrown a pitch in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm, definitely a unique situation there. And so how does the rise of players like Ohtani and Yamamoto relate to the international spread of baseball?
Yeah, so what's really interesting, too, about this contract is that the Ohtani contract is the biggest MLB contract ever given out, and it was given out to an international player. Ohtani and Yamamoto both grew playing in the Japanese Major League. They did not start as MLB prospects. They were signed from the international pool. And it's not only them, it's also, and obviously this is going a little off topic, but what I found really interesting and I just realized is that both MVPs last year for the AL and NL, the American League and National League, neither of them were born in the U.S. They were both international players, which just shows how incredibly large this sport is becoming outside of the place it's known to, you know, be from. But Japan as a nation has really, really adopted baseball. I might say more than any other country outside of, especially any other country outside of, you know, of the Americas. And it's just become a completely massive game there. During the World Baseball Classic, they brought in a record of 38 million viewers for one of their games. That was 48% of the households on the island of Japan watching one game. It has just become, they've become really good at it. They've won three World Baseball Classics. And obviously the U.S. hasn't put their best players in there all the time, but they've still won them. And this year it was especially pronounced because the U.S. didn't put their best players in there, ending very famously with Shohei Ohtani striking out his then teammate and America's best player and the captain of the American team, Mike Trout. So they've really become amazing at the sport. And it's even to the point where MLB players are now heading over to Japan, sort of like a minor league, to recoup their careers, to get back on their feet. If they've had a tough time, American players will head over there instead of playing in the minor leagues and say, you know, this is my best opportunity to get better. And that's just incredible, because I don't know when that started, but that if you would have told that to someone in the 90s with baseball, they would have never believed it. The fact that American players go over to the South Korean League, the Japanese League, not only to play, but to make themselves and build themselves back up after falling on in America's League, that's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you want to add on to that, Kat, before we kind of wrap up and talk about some final thoughts?
I just want to touch back on the significance of signing players like Yamamoto and Ohtani to such large deals, is it offers this extra layer of legitimacy to a league like Japan's. So like Bobby was saying, a lot of American players already go there to kind of develop and show their worth. But to put the level of trust in a player like Yamamoto really shows that American scouts and people who are trying to bring in international players, they also recognize that this is a competitive baseball league. And so that's a really huge thing when we're thinking about international development and how the MLB might continue to grow and diversify in the future, is just keeping in mind that it's not just a small little international league anymore. It's a genuinely competitive atmosphere.
Definitely a force to be reckoned with. Back to you, Bobby.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add in there something that I found fascinating while researching this and looking into this more, is the fact that Japan has taken baseball and seeing America's influence through baseball of soft power and created their own soft power through America's game. They've weaponized the soft power of baseball through players like Ohtani to really increase their influence on the United States and as an international power. And they've done this as well with soccer. Their national team has been incredibly amazing recently. One of the best tennis players in the world is of Japanese heritage. They've taken what America's done so well and they've adopted it to themselves. They've used it, especially because China's become such an economic powerhouse in that region, to really differentiate themselves with their culture and with the way that they, with their politics, with the way that they see the world, and increase their influence, increase their prowess on the international stage. And the fact that they used baseball to do that is incredibly impressive because they've done it so well. Everybody knows Ohtani. Everyone's heard now of Yamamoto. And a lot of people watched that World Baseball Classic and saw that Japan beat the U.S. It's really impressive how they've used that to their own benefit.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it might be time to start calling it the international pastime and not just America's pastime anymore. And just real quick before we, you know, run out of time, either of y'all can kind of respond to this, but do you think that this increased international participation will change America's attitude toward the sport? I know you said that domestic popularity has been declining. Do you think that this might, you know, reawaken some vigor there, or is it just going to kind of peter off?
I think it absolutely could. And I think what it brings to is that baseball's reputation has always been known as like an old man's game. You know, there's a controversy a while ago about an unwritten rule. Tatis Jr. hit a grand slam while they were up, you know, a couple runs, and everybody got mad at him. And everyone's like, well, this is ruining the game. And my counter to that would be it's not. You know, like when you take away the fun parts of the game, you're losing a lot of fans. So bringing in players like Ohtani, players like Yamamoto, and players that people not only just want to watch, but that they're interested in and interested in how they operate as baseball players, but also what they bring as people. You know, like Kat was saying, Ohtani is a massive celebrity in Japan. I've seen multiple New Balance commercials with Shohei Ohtani on it. Like, he is a face of the game. And I think it increases interest in the game as well to know that these players aren't American, to know that they're, you know, they've developed somewhere else, and to see, bring interest to the game, see if they're good or not, you know, to see what they can bring to the table. And oftentimes they're really, really good, as we saw with Ohtani.
Absolutely. Do you want to add anything onto that note, Kat?
Sure. I think that one of the important parts about that domestically is that the reason baseball isn't as popular, like Bobby was saying, is that it's just not seen as fun anymore. And so I think that by expanding international platforms, you draw in a lot of viewership. So the WSBC, it was fun. It was something new. It was a new format. And when we have the games in London and in Mexico City, it gives people a reason to want to go travel, to go to these other places. And it just brings that element of fun. And it gives younger audiences a reason to be engaged with the game. And it takes away from that idea that it's just an old man's sport and that it's a sport for everyone everywhere.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So unfortunately, this is all the time we're going to have. This has been a really great discussion. Bobby, Kat, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, instead of our typical news briefing, we're going to hear from Catherine Kerr regarding study abroad programs offered through Seton Hall in a third-party program, AIFS Abroad.
Hi everyone, my name is Catherine Kerr, and today I'll be sharing with you more information about study abroad and the opportunities that are available to students at Seton Hall. If you're wondering how you'd be able to fit study abroad into your busy course load, don't worry. There are so many different options for those with all different time commitments. So when it comes to study abroad, there is truly something for everyone. To start, a little bit about me. I am a senior at Seton Hall right now, currently working as an alumni campus ambassador for the study abroad company AIFS Abroad. I had the opportunity and pleasure to participate in an AIFS program during the spring semester of 2023 in Granada, Spain. My experience was so rewarding and life-changing that I decided to work for the company afterwards, helping to promote study abroad to students not only on my campus, but also those in my online network. A main point that I always try to stress to students is that there is not just one way to study abroad. There are a variety of programs based on length, location, and company. For example, I chose to study abroad for a whole semester, but there are options to go for an entire year, summer, winter break, which is sometimes referred to as a J term, spring break, or even a Maymester. Each of these options provide the opportunity for anyone to study abroad, even if they have a difficult course load or lack of time or money to study abroad for a longer period of time. In addition to length, location is also something that varies among study abroad programs. AIFS offers programs on all six continents, and other companies offer similar programs. Also, the Seton Hall Study Abroad office offers study abroad opportunities in a variety of countries, such as Italy, France, Morocco, and Japan. The possibilities are almost endless as to where you want to study. If the country or city you want to study in is not offered by the Seton Hall Study Abroad office, you can always go to a third-party program, like AIFS Abroad, to see if the city is offered there. Students have the opportunity to participate in faculty-led programs, third-party programs, or exchanges. While the application processes for both are slightly different, students can earn credits from participating in either program. It is important to ensure that you are staying in contact with an academic advisor when planning your study abroad, and make sure that you give yourself plenty of time to complete the application process and receive course approvals if needed. For more information, please visit the Seton Hall Study Abroad webpage. If you would like to set up a meeting or discuss further study abroad questions, you can contact me or contact the Study Abroad office. At this time, I would like to invite a member of the Global Current staff to share their study abroad experience.
Thank you so much for all that information, Catherine. Personally, this past summer, I studied abroad in Riga, Latvia for 6 weeks as part of a Russian immersion. And so there weren't any programs for me that went to Eastern Europe through the Seton Hall Study Abroad office. So I found a third-party program called SRAS that facilitated a lot of different options for people interested in Russian language and culture to go over there and have different immersive experiences. So I went to class, I stayed in a host family's home, and I had a lot of different excursions. I went to other countries such as Denmark and Lithuania. And overall, it was a really, really enriching time, and I actually plan on continuing that process of studying abroad over this coming up winter break next year to go back to Language Institute and kind of continue that learning. So it's definitely something I highly recommend to anybody who's interested. Definitely go set up a meeting, contact people, because if you don't think it might work with your schedule, there's definitely ways to do so that you might not even be thinking of right now. So if you don't have any other pieces of advice for us or any words of wisdom, Catherine, I just want to thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
So that is all the time we have left for today. Be sure to follow The Global Current on Instagram and LinkedIn for updates on upcoming shows. This show would not have been possible without our dedicated crew, executive producer Bobby Kyle, associate producers Kasia Kostraba and Juliana Mori, technical producers Ashley Skladani and Amelia Vincichinsky, and of course your host, Trisha Ballion. The Global Current is brought to you by Seton Hall University. As always, keep it current with us and catch us in the waves every Sunday at 8:30 a.m. on 89.5 FM WSOU. Until next time, thanks y'all.